Hello and welcome to the Ready for the Right Guy event. I'm so happy that you're here. My name is Michelle Marchand Johnson. I'm hosting this event and I have so many wonderful, amazing guest experts. And today I'm so happy to welcome back to our virtual stage the wonderful Kyle Benson. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So for those of you that may not be as familiar with Kyle or his work, we'll do just a little bit of a formal introduction and then we'll jump right in. Kyle Benson is an international intimate relationship coach, providing practical research-based tools to build long-lasting relationships. Kyle is best known for his compassion and non-judgmental style and his capacity to see the root problem. So, with that, Kyle, I think what we're going to be talking about today is really interesting. I think it's something really important, and we're just going to kind of dance with this conversation and see where it takes us. Perfect. Trust that the things that need to come forward will. Mm-hmm. So we're setting that intention together. So I want to start with a kind of a gateway question, if I can. And that is, we hear this term emotionally unavailable a lot these days, right? I mean, especially in the world of women. Emotionally unavailable men. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts about that, because sometimes I wonder, is that as prevalent as it seems to be by how often we're talking about this now? I just want to hear like kind of what your thoughts are as kind of a gateway into this conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to that. So I'll kind of talk about a few. The first is both men and women can be emotionally unavailable. It's not gender specific in a way. What I do know kind of from the research though is it is much more of a kind of an attachment perspective. And what attachment theory is, it talks about how we are in relationship with other people, how we engage, including self-disclosure, how much we share about our inner lives or what we're feeling, how we feel about feelings, which is like if we feel badly about difficult feelings like sadness or fear, sometimes we'll withhold that rather than sharing it. And so what that kind of gives us is a sense that sometimes when it comes to relationships, people have a tendency to put up an emotional wall, right? Mm-hmm. And what I get a lot of emails on or with clients who I work with is they're trying to reach through that wall and connect with their partner. Mm-hmm. That is so hard when they really want to understand what's going on with their partner. They want to feel like their partner cares about them and is emotionally invested in them. And it's like they can't quite connect with them. And so that's kind of how I would kind of classify it being emotionally unavailable. I think it is fairly prevalent. I think some of that is a little bit more cultural and depends on kind of family stuff. For example, men tend to be more avoidant in their attachment styles according to the research. And I know as a guy, when I was growing up, we were taught, right, don't cry, don't share your feelings, stick to yourself. You can have banter, you can be angry, but don't show anything else. And so we kind of get conditioned to really hold all this stuff inside and not share it. And so there is kind of that component to it as well, which also makes it really tough, because if I was raised learning that sadness is bad or that another emotion is something I need to stay away from, if my partner starts to express sadness, my reaction is either to dismiss it or try to smother it so it goes away, because I am uncomfortable with it. And so that is another thing that is also really important is in these relationships is creating the space to really kind of allow people to have all their feelings, connect over those, and kind of create a sense, a felt sense of being really connected and secure with each other. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. And so one other question I have, and you can speak to this so much better than I can for sure, Kyle, being a man and having been perhaps socialized in some of those ways where you're taught to kind of push down emotions or not express or feel them. Mm-hmm. So there's another perception that men are like more in their heads and tend to be more on the logical side and have a really hard time connecting with feelings. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's a part of it? And is that part of what you were talking about earlier? And I'm tapping into kind of the male side of this a little bit because we're speaking mainly to an audience of women, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so again, I think if you go to a playground, you watch boys play versus you watch girls play. Boys, when a boy falls down in a sports game that they're playing, which maybe this is changing now, but back kind of when I was young, you're playing soccer, one of the boys gets hurt, start crying, right? What the boys will do is we will go over and be like, okay, here's the ball, let's keep playing, right? We don't emotionally support. It's like, let's get the game going. That's what was important. Whereas like you see girls and they might be playing soccer too, but one of them gets injured, they go over and they go, oh, like, tell us about what's going on. What do you need? What's up? Like, they're much more emotionally nurturing and supportive there. And so I think kind of in terms of this, like, that conditioning goes more that logical, how do I problem solve? How do I get this thing done and get through this as quickly as possible, compared to getting in touch with the feelings too? And like when I work with more emotionally avoidant men, like when it comes to emotions, those feel dangerous to them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of a little bit of culture. It's a little bit of family upbringing too, right? If you were in a family where if you were sad and your parents said, stop being sad, just grow up, man up, get over it. Anytime you get into those emotions, it feels unsafe because that's what your body's learned is unsafe. And so that's another thing is men do have a lot of feelings. It's in their bodies. They're humans and have a lot of feelings, but they tend to be more problem solving and more logical because of sometimes their family culture, or just like culture in general. And so that's another reason, like, why sometimes, oh, I don't know what he's thinking. He's not very affectionate. And that's the other thing we see in the research too, mm-hmm. is you don't get that felt sense of, oh, I know he's attracted to me, but I don't hear him say like, God, you're so beautiful, or I love you so much, or you mean the world to me. We don't hear that as often because when you suppress even the, like Brene Brown says this, when you suppress the difficult feelings, it also suppresses the good ones too. And that's something that we also know from the research.
Mm, very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So for women out there or for people out there that are listening and they might be saying to themselves, it feels like I continue to attract one emotionally unavailable person after another. If that's a pattern or they feel like that might be a pattern, what might be going on underneath the surface there?
I mean, there's a lot of things, but sometimes there is an emotional draw towards someone who is emotionally unavailable or who doesn't quite make the same commitment to investing into the relationship. And what I mean by that is they're like, when you give something, you're giving a little bit emotionally, and they're also giving emotionally. There's a sense of we're in this together, there's reciprocity. And what can happen is, because sometimes we have these beliefs about ourselves that, oh, you know, I'm unlovable, or I struggle in relationships, or we've had instances where partners have cheated on us. Sometimes mm-hmm. we get some pretty unhelpful beliefs about ourselves. And like for me, I went through a series of relationships where back to back to back, I ended up getting cheated on. And this was before I got in this space. And so I had a lot of really toxic beliefs about myself. And when I would get into relationship, I had this pressure that I put on myself that I had to go buy roses, buy gifts, buy the person I was with, heels, you know, clothes, like do all this stuff, even though it wasn't really financially something I could pull off. And I was actually going in debt trying to impress this person to keep this person interested in me. And so you can kind of see a little bit there that my belief system about myself led me to stay with someone who might value me differently or the things I do rather than value me as a person. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think this happens for both men and women. If you're not centered in your own value, you have a tendency to feel like you need to overgive in some way. In your case, it was the overgiving of the presents, the gifts, the expensive things that you couldn't afford. Mm-hmm. Women may feel obligated to give sex before they're ready, or they may, you know, they give money. I mean, I actually worked with a client a few years ago, a woman who had actually bought, like, she lived in a waterside community, and she'd actually bought three boats mm-hmm. for three different men. Gone into all kinds of debt to do it for them, gave the boats to the men, and all three of the men were gone sailing wherever they went. They were gone.
Yeah. And that's really important to like recognize, because what happens is that belief system, I have to buy these boats to be loved. Right. And what that does is that insecurity convinces us that we have to be a way that actually prevents us from getting emotionally close to someone, right? to be loved as we are. And I think that's something like when I had to do my own therapy and work through a lot of that stuff, it was me kind of calming down and going, oh, like someone can love me without me constantly buying them things to impress them. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's something that I think is really helpful is for someone to kind of tap into that. Like, what are my beliefs about who I have to be in this relationship? Because just like you said, right, she bought three different boats for these guys, went into a whole bunch of debt, because she believed that's how she would keep the relationship.
Right.
And that's exactly. one of the things we see too, like even in, I know I talked a little bit about research, but like exactly what you're saying is validated in the research, right? We will stay in relationships that are unhealthy because we believe that we have to make this work or this is our only option. We will tolerate much more negativity, much more like I had issues with one of my partners who was still kind of spending a lot of time with her ex-boyfriend. And like, I found stuff that really like, looking back, like that was a deal breaker, but I felt that I couldn't leave because I was so insecure that if I left, I would never find someone as amazing as her or these other things. And that's one of the things that we notice. And so it's really slowing down and kind of acknowledging that as a human being, we really have a lot of worth and starting to appreciate and love that parts about ourselves and honor those and have those boundaries. Because when you start to meet a partner who maybe you're investing more in the relationship or a partner who isn't as committed, you can put up a boundary and kind of share that with them that gives you the possibility of them investing more in the relationship or them walking away because they are not willing to meet you in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's why this part that we're talking about is so very important. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you work also a lot with couples, Kyle. And so I want to just ask a question that is sometimes mystifies me, and maybe there's more to it than I understand. So that is when a partner, man or woman, stays in a relationship where the partner may not just be emotionally unavailable, but they're also perhaps even abusive. And is it because they've got so much invested there, or is it what you're talking about there where they don't feel like they have any other options? It just mystifies me because I've, over the years, spoken to people who've been in or stayed in those kind of relationships for decades.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty complex stuff. But to kind of speak to that, I don't like someone being emotionally unavailable does not necessarily mean they're abusive.
Right.
Right. Abusive stuff. Particularly there's kind of what we know. I mean, there's emotional abuse, there's physical abuse, there's sexual abuse. It is literally, it occurs when there's harm being done, right? We can have conflict and you might feel emotionally hurt about that, but there, it reaches a point where it gets harmful and that's where we start to get into trouble. Now, if we go into kind of talking about abuse stuff and why people stay in that, there's a lot of different reasons for that. One, it might be a little bit more of the investment. Two, they might not feel safe about leaving. Three, like there's this fear of I have to keep this partner together, or this almost like savers, like I'm going to save this person. Eventually they'll be a better person. And that's one of the things we know is there's this, they see the bad behavior, they experience it. But there's also sometimes this belief that, oh, they'll get better, right? If I just hold on a little bit longer. And so there's a lot of things that happen with that. And then also the attachment system kind of convinces us to stay in that too. But that would be, I mean, for us to really go into the psychology of that would be a very long conversation around trauma, abuse, trauma bonding, a whole bunch of stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's fine. We don't have to go that deep into it. Yeah. I just kind of wanted to hear kind of your high level take on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I don't work with those types of couples. I work more with the emotionally unavailable partner and really working with them with the other partner to build a bridge back towards each other. Right. And that's where I kind of work with those couples. Like there's particularly what I see a lot is there's a female partner who's pursuing, like, tell me like, I need you to know that you love me. Like, I want us to be in this together. And the emotionally unavailable partner kind of shuts down, they withdraw, they don't engage emotionally. And what happens is the other partner feels left, they feel abandoned. Mm-hmm. And in those moments when conflict happens, Because the partner shuts down, the event or the conflict never gets processed. It never gets healed. We don't ever learn from how we can do this better as a couple, which is what I kind of teach those couples is how do we stay engaged? How do we start to understand emotions, make it safe to explore this and express this and build a bridge where we're starting to learn how we can be better together, how we can be connected, how we can really work through that. But those are couples who have been together 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And so there's a lot of history. When it comes to dating, I would highly recommend putting up the boundary and trying to keep those people out, because there's a lot more stuff that's going to happen for you to even see if they'll even be open to going to couples therapy. And I get a lot of emails from female partners who are like, I really want to go to therapy. I know it would help us. My partner doesn't open up. You know, we just have fights and we kind of go to our own separate corners. And the partner is just like, I'm not going. I don't want to open up. I don't want to share what's going on. And so that's something that we also need to hold a little bit too. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying, if I want, just to be clear, you're saying if someone's dating someone and they arrive at a conclusion, this person is really emotionally unavailable, mm-hmm. you're saying it's dangerous to continue the relationship and engage because you're potentially setting yourself up for a situation where this person is not going to be willing to do the work to make that deep kind of connection that the other partner is longing for. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, it's going to require a lot of a big investment of time, energy, hurt. And it's exhausting. And so, you know, and like, I've worked with people who have been dating these people for years, and like, they'll try to go back to that person. They really want it to work. And of course you want it to work. You like the person, you love the person, but is that person willing to co-create a healthy relationship with you? Mm-hmm. Are they willing to face their inner demons and kind of their upbringing and acknowledge that the way they protect themselves is by shutting down and not sharing what's going on? And even if they can get to that place, that's a vulnerable place for them to say, this is how I protect myself. Because in that, when I work with couples, we can start to build a bridge. Oh, well, like, what would make it a little bit safer if you did not go into protective mode and actually engage a little bit more? But like I said, if you can find a partner who's already willing to stay engaged, who's already willing to kind of show that they're interested in you, kind of be more verbally affectionate, physically affectionate, respect your boundaries, care about what's interesting to you, things that you care about, really shows interest in you, that's going to be a lot easier for you to co-create a really secure, functioning relationship that is actually healthy for both of you, compared to doing a lot more work, finding therapists, doing books, working with coaches, doing these other things that you might not necessarily have to do with that person. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. I just wanted to make sure we were really clear about what your message was there. And I think it's absolutely, absolutely makes sense. And I think it's very, very good advice. So I know that we have a lot of talk around expressing our needs, mm-hmm. getting in touch with our needs. How can that help us in the process of dating, selecting a partner, all of those kinds of things?
I mean, it helps a lot. And this is one of the things that I know personally, and I know kind of in the literature or even with my clients, like particularly people who have what we call that anxious attachment style, who tend to be attracted to the emotionally unavailable partners, because of how they see themselves, they have a really tough time asserting what they're feeling or sharing it. Right. And sometimes how they share that is very critical. Like I was working with a couple where one partner like would say, and this was the anxious partner, she'd say, you're cheating on me. She'd accuse the partner of cheating on them. Or she'd say, no, we shouldn't even be together. Like it's this ultimate, like ultimatum almost kind of stance of like, I'm done. I can't stand this. But underneath that, there was all these fears about being lovable, fears that the partner cared about her. And there was many things that we started to work on to help her be able to express that in a much more genuine, like I kind of really need to spend time with you. Or I need to know that when we talk about this stuff, you'll engage with me. Right. Well, how can we make that happen? What would that look like? And so those, all the feelings you have are really valid, but how you express them is what's most important. And that's what I know kind of from Dr. Gottman's research, where he says 96% of the time, how you start a conversation predicts also how it's going to end. And so particularly for people who struggle to express their feelings and express their needs, that can get them really stuck because they will stuff those feelings, they'll stuff those needs, tolerate a relationship that isn't really working for them. And that prevents them from creating that secure, healthier relationship. Whereas if they experiment with saying, hey, I really want to spend time with you, or it's really important that we get to talk every day, right? Expressing those needs, that'll do two things. One, it'll kind of coach that new partner on what you need for the relationship to work for you. And you will get evidence to see how they respond. And two, if they're unwilling to do that, as hard as it might be, that might be a good thing, right? Because now you have evidence that they are not willing to make an adjustment or be flexible with you to honor what you need in the relationship to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you want to look for, is someone who's going to prioritize and put your needs on par with theirs. They might not give you exactly what you wanted or envisioned you needed, but they'd be able to say, oh, like, what if we did this to get that need met? Would that still work for you? Right? Mm-hmm. That's really what's important here in finding that secure connection.
Yeah. And looking for kind of creating those win-win scenarios, hopefully, mm-hmm. in a relationship.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's interesting to me that you brought up the what John Gottman says about the way you start a conversation. 96% of that, the success of that conversation is based on how it started. I also seem to think, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, that the way a relationship starts out, like kind of the dance moves that a couple starts doing together as they partner up, that seems to kind of set the tone for the relationship. For the whole Absolutely. Relationship. Like it's hard from my experience for a lot of couples to learn the new dance steps if they've gotten into certain patterns.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot more effort, right? And that's why it's really important, especially in the dating phase, to bring your needs and feelings to the relationship. And because then you get evidence of whether this partner is going to care about those and whether they're going to be a good fit for you. And again, setting those expectations early gives you evidence whether they're the type of partner that you really want to partner with. Because just like you said, the research shows when we do not set those expectations or when we do not set those intentions early on and work together on kind of improving the relationship, getting to know each other, making time for each other, talking about important things, we don't do it throughout the rest of the relationship. We might try to, but it becomes a lot more difficult because the habits of the relationship really start to form in the early stages. And you can always change those habits. I mean, I've worked with couples who've been together 20 years and we changed some of that stuff, but it took a lot more effort. And so I think you're really wise in that point of like how you start this relationship is really important. The types of questions you ask, getting to know each other, prioritizing time together, and finding someone who's willing to really invest in the relationship is going to be very beneficial for you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And having the clarity and confidence to be able to express your needs and ask for what you want and need in a relationship also comes from that place of being centered kind of in your own value and believing that you are enough. Because I think a lot of times women are afraid, and I'm speaking again specifically for women, but I'm sure it applies to men, to ask for what they want or need because they're afraid that will scare someone off or it'll be too much for them or it will, they'll come across as needy or whatever the case may be.
Which I would say is great. If you scare someone off, good.
Yeah.
Because they're not someone that, I mean, unless you're doing some really weird things where you're stalking them or doing things like that, but then we have something, a different discussion. But if you're expressing feelings and they withdraw, that's not a good fit for you, right? Because if you were to settle for a relationship with them, what you're teaching yourself is that your feelings and needs aren't worth it, that you have to minimize them to be in a relationship with this person. To make yourself lovable, you have to dismiss what you need and what you feel to be in that relationship. But if you honor that, right, and that person goes away, as hard as it is to lose what you thought you could have had or what that relationship might be, it actually puts you in a much better position to have the relationship that you want and probably a relationship that you deserve.
Yeah, and so good to find that out
mm-hmm.
early on before you have invested months, years of your time, of your life. Yeah,
before you've really fallen in love too, right? And that's one of the things is, oh, like the dating's so exciting. We, you know, our hormones, our, you know, the neurochemistry, like all that stuff is really going. So we fall in love with this person. But we also got to ask ourselves, like, is this the type of person I really want to spend a lot more time in and really invest into? Mm-hmm. And how do I know that too? Mm-hmm. So yeah, great idea.
Yeah. So I know this is something that in the 8 Dates book, which is a book that I recommend often to my clients, they talk a lot about, and I know you're familiar with it, about the importance of having shared values and talking about those things in advance. Is this a part of this? Is this connected to this? How does this interplay with all of this?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, it's really important. Without doing too much like nerding out on like the Gottman approach, which is from that book, like essentially the shared meaning is, what do we value in our relationship? And do those values line up? Do we value our relationship as important? And what are the behaviors that we do that kind of confirm that that's what we value, right? Because a lot of people say, oh yeah, I really want a relationship, or relationship number one thing. They can all, a lot of people can say that, but what they do also demonstrates what they value too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you, like, I've had couples where I've been working with one of the individual partners, they meet someone, they start dating, and I had them go through those dates in that book because it gets them to have conversations that they would likely not have without that book. Going through conflict, going through intimacy, going through what family life was like, going through their values and creating a relationship that's really meaningful. And that's what the shared meaning part is how do we build the relationships that meet, that is emotionally meaningful to us, that's fulfilling. And that is if you can create that, that's kind of like what I call, it's like the penthouse of a satisfying relationship, because it's really beautiful when you can create it.
Mm-hmm. So I think you've touched on this a little bit already in our conversation, but I just think this would be a good place to kind of go next. And that is, what are some like things to be aware of or to look for, especially in the early stages of a relationship, besides some of the things we might've already talked about, to determine whether or not someone is emotionally unavailable or emotionally available? And how do we know if we're the one that's emotionally unavailable, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think you know, I'm going to go to a different approach, you know, which is kind of related to attachment theory. But Sue Johnson, she wrote a book called Hold Me Tight, and she talks a lot about couples. But I really like her philosophy on the quality of relationships are determined by the question: are you there for me? And so what that means is A stands for accessibility. Is the person easily, can you easily reach them? Or, you know, can you access them when you need them? And then the next one is responsive, right? If you text them, do they wait 5 days to text you back, right? That's probably not someone you really want to invest time in, because they're not very responsive. And that's the same for you. Like, does someone text you and then you wait 4 days while you're working and doing other things to be responsive? That's not exactly showing that you're really invested in the relationship. And then engaged, right? That's the E part of the R. And that is, are you engaged with each other when you're in person, when you're connected, or are you on your phones? Are you kind of talking to other people? Like, can you really kind of create that sacred space of intimacy and really explore each other? And so I think asking those questions would be really helpful. Is, am I accessible? Am I responsive to this person? And am I engaged in kind of our relationship and what it's growing towards? And then kind of asking, are they available? Are they accessible to me? Are they responsive to my needs or what I want in this relationship? And they engaged in making this relationship work with me? I think asking those 6 questions will be very powerful to determining whether that person is going to invest in the relationship and help you co-create a relationship that's really meaningful to both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's a really powerful acronym, so to speak, and some really powerful questions to ask. So this has been a really, really fascinating conversation. And I always love talking to you, because I think not only is your information experience-based, but I know you do a lot of research into the things that you teach. And so I really respect that, because you've got not just opinions or not just experience, but actually a lot of research. Do you want to share anything more about that or about our topic today before we offer your free gift?
No, I think it's just important, right? All the stuff I shared about has been researched because it's common, right? And I think in that, like, we can kind of see that we're not alone in this, right? And there are resources, there are tools, there are, you know, there's a lot of research that shows when we do certain things, when we start to work on ourselves or work on the relationship, we can make a lot of changes, right? And even that part where you said, oh, if you're the more kind of emotionally unavailable partner, right? You now have a little bit of an idea of some questions you can start to ask yourself that can start to change some of your behavior, which will also change maybe how that person engages with you. And so I think that's something that, in terms of the research, that I think is just really important, that we're not alone in this, and that you're not a problem. You're not unlovable. There's some stuff maybe you've internalized, but that stuff can also be healed. And part of that is learning to tolerate your needs and expressing those in relationships, and seeing kind of how the people you're dating respond to those. And hopefully they will respond in a positive way. And if they don't, move on. And as difficult as it might be, that's going to be the healthiest thing for you. And that's what the research confirms as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just think that's worth mentioning. You know, we have to also be willing to look inward, not just to how our partners are showing up, because especially if there are patterns of relationships going a certain way, at some point you have to say, okay, I got to look in the mirror and recognize I am at least a common denominator in all of this. Mm-hmm. And so some of this may be me, not them. My husband used to work with a man years ago who had been married like 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. And my husband worked at this particular place for a long time. So he saw him go through several of these marriages. And after all of them, and then he would tend to get back in another one really fast. Mm-hmm. And after each marriage, he would talk about how bad this person was, how she wasn't there for him, what a jerk she was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until like about the 5th or 6th marriage when he started to kind of say, you know, maybe
it's me.
Maybe I have something to do with all of this. Maybe I haven't just picked 6 bad women all in a row.
Right. And that's something I think that's really important to reflect on too, is the other person always brings some component to the relationship, right? They bring their own personal history, their life, kind of all their life experiences, as do you, right? And in that, you have a lot of choices, right? You have the choice to stay engaged in the relationship. You have the choice to put up boundaries when your needs are not getting met, and to see if that partner will respond and honor those needs. But you do have to kind of check in and like, how am I in this relationship, right? Do I start fights just because I want to get some attention, or do I actually go and say, hey, like, I really miss you, or I really want to spend more time with you? Do you express more of that vulnerable stuff that gets them to see you much more clearly? Or do you kind of attack them? Like, and so that's another really important part about learning about yourself, because you are a part of the relationship. You're a partner in it. And you have some contribution and some aspect of things that you bring that help co-create that relationship, whether it's unhealthy or healthy. So I like that you really brought that kind of point out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kyle. I really appreciate everything you've shared, and appreciate your generosity, and really, really think this is a fascinating and interesting topic, and I think it'll help a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
So we have a free gift for you called Authentic Attraction, 5 Secrets to Lasting Love, which is an ebook. You want to share a little bit about it?
Yeah, it kind of talks a little bit of what I talked about today about honoring your needs, kind of some of the stuff about rejection, and why that can actually be really healthy. And kind of the mindset that would be most helpful for you is in terms of asking yourself, what's going to make this relationship good for me? And what type of partner would that be? Because then you can use that to go out and find someone who's going to be a better fit, look for what they do, not only what they say, but also what they do. And go back to those 6 questions we talked about of the, are you there for me? So that's kind of what that ebook covers.
Okay, great. So for everybody watching or listening, you can get the ebook by clicking on the link below this video or audio that you're listening or watching from. And of course, it's available now, but it will also be available throughout the rest of the event. But make sure you get it now, because Kyle has so much wisdom and we've just barely scratched the surface today. So I know you're going to want to receive more from him and have the opportunity to stay in touch with him. So make sure to click on the link below. And Kyle, again, I want to thank you once again for being so generous with your wisdom.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me here.
Yeah, lovely to have you. And ladies, we hope you'll join us for more of the Ready for the Right Guy event. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.